Greetings, brethren. Happy Sabbath to everyone. So thank you for your share in the service to make it as honorable to Elohim as possible, as every one of us, as we come before Elohim, whether every day or on the Sabbath day or holy days, we must present ourselves before Him holy and with a gift, right? There was the daily sacrifice offered every single day. There was the Sabbath sacrifice. There was the new sacrifices for the new month, sacrifices for every single appointed time, the holy days, you know. So on the Sabbath too, when we come, when we gather, we ready ourselves to offer our praise, to beautify the service with a mosaic of different readings from the scriptures, so that hearers, so that we together can be edified by the words that are being read, and as these messages can be heard by others, whoever is hearing them can hear the various what we have to. Of the different things we have to offer. I'm even considering recording our scripture readings, but that will be seen in time. Today we will continue with the book of Acts, Acts chapter 18, verses 11 is where we left off last Sabbath. We will continue from verse 11 through verses 17, and I would like to ask an immediate person to quickly to read for us Acts chapter 18, verses 11 through 17. Please kindly do that for us very quickly, nice and loud. Thank you.
Acts chapter 18, verses?
Verses 11 through 17.
Okay, there we go. And he continued here in 6 months. That's Paul, okay? So, and he continued there a year and 6 months, teaching the word of Elohim among them. Verse 12. And when Gallio was the deputy of Achaia, the Jews made insurrection with one accord against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat, saying, this fellow persuades men to worship Elohim contrary to the law. And when Paul was now about to open his mouth, Gallio said unto the Jews, if it were a matter of wrong or wicked lewdness, O ye Jews, reason would I that I should bear with you. Let me read that again. If it were a matter of wrong or wicked lewdness, for ye Jews, reason that I should bear with you. But if it be a question of words and names and of your law, look you to it, for I will not judge of such matters. And he drave them from the judgment seat, and all the Greeks took Sosthenes, the chief ruler of the synagogue, and beat him before the judgment seat. And Gallio cared for none of these things. And Paul, after this, tarried there yet a good while, and then took his leave of the brethren, and sailed from there into Syria. And with him Priscilla and Aquila, having shorn his head in Cenchrea, for he had made a vow.
Thank you. I'm just curious here. Yeah, okay, so you stopped at verse 18, but that's fine. You needed to stop at verse 17, which is probably what we'll cover, but that is fine. So today we have quite a bit to cover and go over. And we saw in verses 11, where we left off last week, that Paul was granted by the Eternal an opportunity to teach the word in Macedonia for 1 year and 6 months. That's really a long time. So this was real, as far as Paul is concerned, because this was about the first time Paul experienced this duration of stability, where he wasn't running and, I would say running, where he was not escaping capture or being killed by mostly the Jews who didn't believe. There were many Jews that did believe, and other Jews that were not, you know, so sure, but they were not necessarily trying to kill Paul or capture or kill Paul, but there were some that were bent, many that were bent on destroying Paul, especially those in Thessalonica, as we saw, that they rejected him outright. And then even when Paul left and went to Berea, Paul escaped them, left Thessalonica, went to Berea, where we were told there were more noble Yehudim there, and as well as other righteous Gentiles there. They came even there to persecute him, and Paul had to leave there too, right? And we find him here in Acts chapter 18, and after this respite, this break, as remember the Messiah gave him appeared to him in a dream, saying, "Don't fear to speak." That he had much people here, so he stayed there for a year without any problem, a year and 6 months, a year and a half without any problems. But after, as we see in verse 12, after this year, this and a half period, Jews in Achaia, in unison together, rose up against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat. And at that time, Gallio was the deputy or proconsul of Achaia. So he was a man of high authority that made decisions there. When I looked at Achaia, I wanted to find out where Achaia was. I saw in some sources that Achaia was in Corinth, and Achaia was, you can call the administrative capital of the Roman province. Okay, that's in Corinth, and it's called Achaia. Sometimes it's spelled A-C-H-E-A, as we see here in English, or A-C-H-A-I-E. I'm sorry, H-A-I-A. So this city is what we're reading about here in the New Testament. It was the place where decisions were made. It was the administrative province of Achaia in Corinth. And this is why, as we'll see, we read about the judgment seat. So we'll read a little bit about that as we go. Yeah, so that's what Achaia was. Achaia was a province in Corinth, which is the administrative capital of Rome, of the Roman Empire, I should say. Okay, and so let's move on. So that's this Achaia, and Galileo, I'm not Galileo, Gallio was the deputy. He was the one deputized or given the authority. He was the proconsul of Achaia. He is the one that made the final decisions about matters, important matters of law. He was the one. So they came, they brought Paul, and all together, so it says together. Let me read that verse, in that portion in verse 12. It says, and when Gallio was the deputy in Achaia, the Jews made an insurrection, or they rose up against Paul in one accord. They agreed, they came together, they were not divided, they had a set purpose to bring this man down, to stop Paul. It wasn't a small thing. It says, the Jews, all of them in one accord did this. They had their case. We've seen this before. We saw this, how they conspired against our wonderful Savior, Yeshua, how they brought him before Pilate and accused him, and together had all sorts of witnesses. So we could imagine this. We've seen them do this against Stephen. We've seen them do this before. We've seen them do this before. So that's what's going on here. They really want to stop Paul. So that's the place for this decision to be made, in Achaia, this administrative hub, place of authority of the Roman Empire. So in verse 13, we see that those Jews accuse Paul of convincing people to serve Elohim in manners contrary to the law, and the law being their law at this time. And it's very important we keep in mind the law of Elohim and their law. This is their law. So when they say the law. So as we've seen before, as mentioned, this has been the type of accusation used against Paul before, against his fellow apostles, against his fellow workers, and against his master, the supreme Messiah. We see in Matthew chapter 26, verse 59, let me quickly turn to there. Matthew 26, verse 59 to 60 says, now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witnesses against Yeshua to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came two false witnesses. We see this. Okay, so they did the same thing against Messiah and other places of the gospel where they just brought false accusations. Any type of accusation to try to get him arrested and put to death. Possibly. I'm sure that's what they would have wanted. I believe that's what they would have wanted. So the Jews followed. Now, when it comes to the law, as I mentioned, remember, the Jews followed what's called the traditions of the elders. In Mark chapter 17, verses 2 through 13, we see this bit of information. Mark chapter 7, verses 2. Let's make sure I have the right thing. Yes. So Mark chapter 7, verses 2 to 13 says, and when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with defiled hands, with unclean hands, that is to say, with unwashed hands, they found fault. But we know we saw no such commandment, no such law, even though, you know, it's reasonable to clean your hands, but it's not a law. It's not a matter to be accused or to be condemned for, but they found fault. For the Pharisees and all the Jews, except they wash hands, often eat not, holding the tradition of the elders. Okay? And when they come from the market, except they wash, they eat not, and many other things there be, which they have received to hold as the washing of cups and pots, brazen vessels, and of tables. Then the Pharisees and scribes ask him, why walk not your disciples according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands? Now, you know, as I said, it is reasonable to wash your hands, but not with what they have in mind. The judgment they have in mind is not warranted here. So he, that is Messiah, answered and said unto them, well hath Isaiah prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Okay, you see, there's actions, but their intention, their heart, it's not right. It's not right. Even so, it's not just these traditions Messiah would have had any problems with. He would have had issues with their prayers. He would have had issues with their observance of the Sabbath, with their observance of the holy days, with their sacrifices, and everything they would have done, because what? Their intentions were not right. How much more traditions which were added because of men? Yes, just as the prophet Isaiah had mentioned, oh, away with your Sabbaths, away with your prayers. So when I want to say this because a lot of people always see here it says away with the Sabbath. The Sabbath is not to be kept. That's not true. Because he said away with the raising of your hand, away with your fasting, away with a lot of things that were, if done with the right intentions, good. But these were not being done in the right intention. So Elohim did not want these pollutions coming before him, and neither would his beloved son care about them washing their hands with their evil intent. So as he says, these people honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of Elohim, you hold to the tradition of men, as washing of pots and cups, and many other such like things ye do. And he said unto them, full well, you reject the commandment of Elohim, that you may keep your own tradition. For Moses said, honor your father and your mother, and whosoever curses father or mother, let him die the death. But you say, if a man shall say to his father or mother, it is korban, that is to say, a gift by whatsoever you might be profited by, he shall be free. So in other words, instead of giving their taking care of their parents with whatever sustenance or money or food they may have, oh, it's a gift. And so they, in other words, it's a gift to be offered, so to say. And so the parents are not honored while they offer sacrifices, so they say, right? Verse 12 said, and you suffer him no more to do aught for his father or his mother. You don't allow him, for everything is being offered as some sacrifice or as some offering, while the parent of the one offering it is not being cared for. And these rules, these practices were by the tradition of the elders. So it is making the word of Elohim none effect through your tradition which ye have delivered. Again, that word delivered here appeared again. Delivered. In verse 4 it says, and many other things there be which they have received to hold. So you see, you have heard, but it is written. So these are things they receive by their own traditions, hedges or boundaries that were set by man. Whatever their intentions were, it didn't work out well. Did not work out well at all. So making the word of Elohim of none effect through your tradition which ye have delivered. And or handed down, and many such like things you do. So many such like things, in other words, with the same type of thinking, with the same type of purpose, rules and regulations they set up for the same types of reasons. So this is what's going on here when they're accusing Paul when they're accusing Paul of against doing things contrary to the law. It's not the law of Elohim, but it's their law, all the traditions they have in mind. So we see furthermore that that this law, their law was based or mixed with man-made ordinances. Now, as I said, I'm going to allow some time now up to verse 13. Is there anything you would like to share? Just jump in and share anything you would like to share right now from what we've read or said so far. Anything you would like to share right now, jump in and share right now. Thank you. Okay, so there are no comments. Let's continue. So in verse 14 of chapter 18, we said, so before Paul could even speak or respond against the accusations, Gallio, who is the chief deputy, rejected the Jews' accusations. He would not and deemed it not worth his time to involve himself with matters that are not wrongdoings or heinous crimes. And again, we saw the same thing with Pilate. Remember when the Master Yeshua was being accused? He gave similar responses. If this is a matter of your law, attend to it yourself. You know, but they pressed on. Right? But same type of mindset here. But so we see here the deputy, Gallio, refused to judge this. This is not a crime. This is just a matter of your personal laws. You tend to it. Verse 14. He says, and when Paul was now about to open his mouth, Gallio said unto the Jews, if it were a matter of wrongdoing or wicked lewdness or crime, O you Jews, reason. Would that I should bear with you. See, I should bear. He's not going to sit here and listen to any of this because it's not worth judgment in the Roman mindset. Now, a quick aside. There are many places in the New Testament, especially starting with our Master Yeshua, how you saw he praised the Gentiles for their perspectives, for their faith. What was their faith? Sometimes it was their ability to understand certain things so that they can believe. For instance, the centurion, when he came to ask prayer Messiah to pray to Messiah to heal his servant, he said, I'm not worthy to come to for you to come into my house. Just send the word and he will be healed. For I too am a man under who has many servants under him, basically. And he understands that he can say to that one, go and do this, go and do that, and it will be done. So you see, he had the right faith. He had a right understanding of things to make him believe, to make him trust that Yeshua could do it, and that Yeshua did not physically have to go there. Something that many others did not have. And so, and Yeshua praised him and said, in all Israel, I've not found any with such faith, right? So what's going on with the Gentiles? People don't understand this. And then people think, don't understand. Yeshua, as I mentioned last Sabbath while we were with Yahad Elohim, Yeshua, they're concerned about mercy, justice, and equity. Before you come and try to worship and offer praise and or keep Sabbath and all that, if you don't have mercy, justice, and these weightier matters of the law, so to say, of character, no one should waste their time trying to please Elohim with Sabbath keeping, as these things are more important. That's why Yeshua also said, or maybe more important is not the word, but a prerequisite. I think that's the better word. It's a prerequisite. Before you could deal with the holy things, the holy customs of Elohim, you must be made holy. You must be first, at least righteous, to have some degree of righteousness. That's why Yeshua said, before you go and offer your sacrifice, make sure you are reconciled with anyone that you are in conflict with. Be reconciled first. Leave your gift. Be reconciled first. And then offer your gifts. What am I saying? The Gentiles have obtained this, brethren. It is known. The Roman law superseded what the Jews and others were doing. It did. Their justice system was more just. Remember what Elohim said in the scriptures. He gave them laws. He gave them a perfect way. He gave them principles. But on account of their stiff-neckedness and sins, he gave them laws that would what? That would not profit them. I don't have the reference in front of me to share with you, but if any of you could find it where it says that'll be great. But and I could try to find it another time if you don't. But I would give them laws that would not profit you. And he said to those who prided themselves in the law, he said to them, beware of the lying pen of the scribe. Way back in the time of Jeremiah. So he allowed such things. So we have to be very careful and understand so that we don't get caught up and be deceived by the enemy to make us think somehow what the Gentiles were doing was unacceptable. No. There was idolatry, there were certain things, but they were doing certain things that were acceptable to Elohim more so than what Israel was doing. And that's why many times you would see Paul would say the Gentiles have obtained certain things by their faith. Because they had the right, a better understanding so that they can set up rules, a government system that was more fair than what Jerusalem had. Jerusalem, you had the stoning of Peter, I'm sorry, the stoning of Stephen, stoning of Paul, killing unjustly killing prophets for centuries before Messiah came, before the apostle, you know it. And Elohim's own testimony says they are more sinful than any other. So that's what's going on here, brethren. So we have to understand the scriptures through the scriptures. What's going on now that we're dealing with the Gentiles to understand so that we don't make the mistake of not understanding the revelations of Elohim to the Gentiles? Because somewhere it is written, I don't need to talk to you about love, for Elohim has already shown you how to love. Okay, so be very careful. Because Elohim gave the Jerusalem, the Jews, Israel, a special place because that's where the holy seed was to come. And when that seed came, the one to whom it belonged, that was done. It's history to this very day. Over 1,000 years, Jerusalem has never received any type of real authority. So keep that in mind. Elohim knows what he's doing. Let's not fail to regard the operation of his hands. We have to look at what he is doing. Not just read the scriptures with blinders. Read the scriptures in light of the reality all around you, of nature, of his creation, and his works among all people. Then you will understand the scriptures better. So the justice system established by Rome exceeded that which was in corrupt Jerusalem right now. And that's why by this time, there was no Ark of the Covenant in Jerusalem. None. And while there was the Ark of the Covenant long before that, it was empty. And eventually the Ark itself was gone. So when they officiate in the temple in the days of the apostles, there's no Ark of the Covenant there. It's the whole thing is slowly falling apart, being removed by Elohim. When all these things being taken away is Elohim's visible work of removing this system on account of the idolatry and evil in it, of those handling it. So let's move on here. So it says before, verse 14, before Paul could speak a word, we read that, right? Verse 14, I would bear with you, he said, if it was a matter of a crime or some wrongdoing. But in verse 15, he says, if it is a question, Gallienus emphatically advised the Jews that if it's a matter of their laws, it was their prerogative. He would not judge such concerns. And thereafter, what did he drove them out from the judgment seat? Let's go back a little bit. Let's stop at the judgment seat for a little bit. Actually, let's move on, and then we'll talk about the judgment seat for a little bit. So he would not judge such concerns. Thereafter, he drove them from the judgment seat. Notice the judgment seat is mentioned in verse 12 and 16. Why is Elohim mentioning this? Why? Why does he have them record this? Remember when Messiah was condemned by Pilate? It was before a judgment seat. In John chapter 18, verses 28 and 33. Take a quick look. John chapter 18. John chapter 18, verses 28 to 23 says, John 28 says, then led they, that is the Jews, then they led Yeshua from Caiaphas into the hall of judgment. And it was early, and they themselves went not in the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. So here we hear of a hall of judgment, or a praetorium, the governor's headquarters. That's the governor's headquarters. That's the governor that was in Jerusalem, located in Jerusalem, to make the decisions, final Roman authoritative decision in Jerusalem. So in verse 33, we read again, then Pilate entered into the judgment hall again and called Yeshua and said unto him, art thou the king of the Jews? So he entered into his place of authority and asked these things. In verse 9, so we read of the judgment hall, but in verse 19, we read of a judgment seat in chapter 19. Chapter 19, verses 13 says, and when Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Yeshua forth and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. And there, it was on that judgment seat that he condemned, that he delivered Yeshua to be crucified, as shown in verse 16. So he sat down in the judgment seat and delivered Yeshua to the Jews to be crucified. So that's found in John chapter 19, verses 13 to 16. So the judgment seat here, and as shown in Acts chapter 18, verse 16, is a seat, in this case, where Roman rulers make important decisions about important cases of legal matters. Legal matters. That's what that was. Remember, Rome was the ruling authority over all the world. All over the world. And Rome, like Babylon and the king, you know, ruled by Nebuchadnezzar, who conquered Israel and Jerusalem way back in the times of Daniel, they were the rulers. Babylon, Rome was the ruler here. And remember, all authority is from Elohim. Elohim is the one who established Rome to do this. Everything that would follow on from the time of Messiah until the destruction of the temple are the judgments of Elohim, are his decision. It's important for us to have the right perspective of these biblical events. So the judgment seat here. And verse 17 says, and the chief ruler of the synagogue, Sothenes, was beaten by the Greeks. So Gallio, the judge, the deputy didn't care for any of those, what they had to say. He drove them out. And later on, we find that it says the Greeks, in verse 17, we're coming to a close, the Greeks took Sophanes, the chief ruler of the synagogue, and beat him before the judgment seat. But Gallio cared not for none of these things. So, he took no notice, he didn't care, while the Greeks beat Sophanes. I'm not too sure completely, but I get the hint, because I wasn't too sure. I'm not exactly 100% sure who Sophanes is, but in verse 8 of chapter 18, we read of Crispus, the chief ruler of the synagogue. Crispus, the chief ruler, and in here, in verse 17, it says, the Greeks took Sophanes, the chief ruler of the synagogue. What I'm gathering just from this information is I suspect that Sophanes and Crispus are one and the same person. It's probably a different name. We find Sophanes mentioned in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 1. Read that real quick and we're going to come to a close. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 says, verses 1, Paul, called to be an apostle by Yeshua the Messiah through the will of Elohim, and Sophanes, our brother. So Sophanes is a fellow brother. And we know that it says in verse 8, Crispus and the chief ruler of the synagogue believed on the sovereign, on the supreme, and with all his house. So I could conclude, unless I see otherwise, that Crispus and Sophanes are one and the same person. But I don't know why. So C says he drove, let's get a little context here. So he drove out the Greeks, the Jews who were accusing Paul. Yeah, he drove them out. He didn't punish Paul or do anything to Paul. But yet it says then, verses 7, then all the Greeks took Sophanes, the chief ruler, which would be Crispus, definitely a brother of a fellow believer, according to 1 Corinthians verses 1, and the 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 1, and they beat him. And so it says Gallio didn't care. So in other words, for whatever, who knows? We don't know what happened. We've seen before how the Jews would don't give up, and that they would stir up the crowd sometimes. So maybe it's very possible that what happened here after their attempt to destroy Paul failed, they probably stirred up the unbelieving Greeks, and they attacked Crispus or Sophanes. They attacked him in a sense, punish him because of the fact that he in a way is the one who allowed for Paul to live with Justice, who was a worshiper of Elohim, who lived next to the synagogue. That's in verse 7 and 8. So I'm saying maybe they stirred up a crowd. They stirred up the crowd, and that's why the Greeks attacked the house, the Sophanes, the ruler. And again, I suspect that Sophanes and Crispus are one of the same person. So I stop here, and again, what we can see in a brief summary, in verse 11, Paul as Yeshua told him, there were lots of people where he was in Corinth, in Macedonia, that part of the world, and he preached and taught the word for about a year and a half there. Then he was captured and brought to the judgment seat before Gallio, who was the decision maker, the administrator, the deputy there. Gallio rejected their claims, as he found them nothing worth judging. There was no crime. There was nothing done wrong. And then we saw different occurrences of similar things that happened before with Yeshua and the apostles. And then we see finally here how in retaliation, when the Jews did not get their way, the unbelieving Jews did not get their way, they most likely stirred up the Greeks to attack that righteous man, that fellow brother, Sothenes, in retaliation. So thank you, brethren, for listening. If you have any questions, we will take your questions or comments now. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. So, yes, just a brief comment. As you point out, the difference, the similarity of these two, I believe that's what it is as well. So they took vengeance. So since this man, the proconsul, didn't do anything, he didn't want to deal with religious arguments. He made it clear what his judgment is based on, wickedness and crime or uprising. Basically, that's what. So when this thing happens, they feel vengeful, and they went after that man and beat him up. And that's basically it. It seems to be linking. I thought I would find a different version elsewhere, but I'll have to check on a different book, as it seemed like you said they both wanted to say.
Thank you. Thank you. Does anyone have anything different that you might add, or a question that you might have? Just quickly, any thoughts?
Sure, brother. I'd like to throw something in there.
Hey, welcome, brother. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I see clearly the same thing that we see going on today, that it only takes one or two people to just stir up problems and cause a terrible problem, that trying to do the right thing and preaching the word and reading the word, and even in that, it don't take but the enemy just using one or two people to come and cause a problem and to stir up, and then that just creates a big, the crowd just goes wild. It's like they love to see that, especially in the world. If you go out and talking to people, you might have 5 or 10 people sitting there talking to them, but it only takes one person to come up and start disturbing and causing a problem, and then they all seem to kind of turn. A lot of people turn real quickly is kind of what I get out of it, is we should know that coming. We should be prepared for that, I believe. We should be watchful to know, if they're not for us, they're against us, type thing. Thank you for letting me be here, brother.
You're very welcome. Thank you very, very much for adding that. Anyone else?
And then the only thing I can add to that is, no one is looking for peace. That point is, they don't even see how harmful or harmless this person is. They just went and, according to custom, base this person and then find them as the most destructive of all, to the point they want him to be punished to the fullness of whatever law they have in their own mind for him to be judged. That's all. That's what we see here as well. No heart for forgiveness or finding what justice is.
Yes, death is not a matter of what's right, but it's their self-zeal. Not the zeal of Elohim, not the love of Elohim, but self-zeal, what they want, whatever, even if it's contrary to the ways of Elohim and obvious righteousness. All right, brethren, so thank you. We're about to stop here. Next Sabbath, we will continue with Acts chapter 18 from verses, what did we leave off? 17, and continue forward and hopefully finish that chapter. Thank you very much. Now I turn it back to Felix.